Dryad Ramen and the Dungeon Guide by Incurable Peppermint, read by Kurishiro RSB. It's still an hour to opening, but the restaurant already smells delicious. Lyos is sitting at a table in the far corner. He's been temporarily banned from the kitchen, and as much as he'd like to be back there taste-testing, he understands why he's stuck here. His unending appetite does not mix well with their decidedly limited ingredients. It would be great if they could gather enough to sate both Lyos and their customers, but that isn't feasible at the moment. As hard a time as Lyos is having trying to ignore the melting cheeses and sizzling peppers, he is trying to see the bright side of his culinary exile. It makes the food better, for one thing. No, that's not the right description. Lyos leans his chin on his hand and closes his eyes. It tastes better, because of the anticipation. He can't steal a bite here or a lick there, and instead has to sit there drooling at the smell until everything is finished and one of his friends brings him a sampler platter of the day's menu. The extra weight also gives him a chance to work on his combination Monster Manual Cookbook Dungeon Guide. In front of him on the table is his dungeon journal, where all of his immediate, messy impressions are jotted down and drawn out while he's still underground. Next to it, he has the manual proper. He's been taking painstaking care and keeping it neat, tidy, and organized. And not just because Marcel wouldn't agree to help submit it for publication until he promised to make it more legible, though that's definitely what made him start paying attention to his handwriting. He wants more adventurers to willingly make neat dungeon food, not just as an oddity at their restaurant, but as a better, more interesting supplement in their dives. And then, when they see how fun and tasty that is, they'll write their own food guides. And then Lyos can collect a bunch of guides for different dungeons and go and taste all the best monsters from each one. Lyos shakes his head out of that tasty daydream and gets back to work. He's so close to making monster cuisine a more acceptable hobby he can practically taste it. Floor 4. Typically, the further into a dungeon you go, the larger the levels get. That is not true for this dungeon. Floor 4 is actually the smallest level thus far. This entire floor of the dungeon is overrun by a massive vineyard of dryad habitat. The ground is made of stone bricks with dirt piled on top. There is an ankle-height fence made of stone bricks around the entire perimeter, then a gap, then the dungeon's actual walls. This level of the dungeon is floating on a lake that feeds up into the strong roots of the dryad vines. The vines hang on the relatively short trellis archways. Most of the space on this floor is a maze of hallways underneath those trellises. These are a suitable height for half-foot and dwarves, but the average tall man or elf will need to crouch throughout. The dirt is well packed on all of the pathways, making it difficult to keep track of the paths taken via footprints. On a similar note, breadcrumb systems will not work here, as a dryad will take, move, or clean up anything left behind. The best course of action is to continuously map as you traverse the maze. There have only been 3 open areas discovered on the floor so far. The first is a small circular bit of stone pathway right at the entrance coming from floor 3. There is a large stone fountain in the middle. The fountain consists of a large basin and 2 dragon statues on opposite sides of the basin, both shooting fresh water out of their eyes. These look to be a more aquatically adapted version of your typical wyvern with webbed feet on the hind legs and a generally smoother, more hydrodynamic form. This type of wyvern has not appeared in the dungeon up to this floor. It is unclear if these are meant to be a depiction of a theorized version, a now extinct type of dragon, or a monster that further exploration will uncover. It takes a lot of restraint to stop there. Lyos wants to fill the whole page with his theories about the fountain wyvern. Are they so squat because of the limitations of carving a figure that size? Or do they have a thicker layer of fats than the other dragons to do with the cold temperatures underwater? Are the actual wyverns accurate to the size of the statues? That had only put them up to his thighs. In the fountain feature, the crying, is that a characteristic of the wyvern? A Siddiq Tears would be interesting, though not particularly useful if it's an underwater creature. It could just be some kind of symbolism, or some misguided anthropomorphism. And then the cooking possibilities. Of course, Laius has eaten enough dungeon food to know that a lot of things taste much different than expected. The kraken that Marcilla insists tastes worse than a normal squid. The surprisingly crabby flavour of a baromets. The cross-section of flavours all in the same tentacle. Still, if Laius had to guess, he'd say they're probably similar to seals. A bit gamey, a little fishy, and rich with blubber. Senshu would probably fry the meat in its own fat. Greasy and rich, served alongside something leafy to wrap them in, and pickled vegetables to add a nice bit of acid to the mix. If the wyverns really lived deeper down, then it would be dried vine leaves from the fourth floor and pickled man-eating plants from the first floor. Laius realizes that he's drooling. He wipes his mouth on the sleeve, then carefully pushes the manual to the side so the ink can dry properly before he moves on to the next page. He's already learned his lesson about that. The first version of this manual was ruined when the pages all dried stuck together. The fancy ink that Phelan helped him pick out writes smoothly and cleanly with minimal dropping or leakage, which makes everything much more legible and tidy. It just needs a little more time than Laius had given it. He was used to charcoal and graphite, smudgy but quick. Now he's having to take his time writing out every word with a careful hand. Chilchuck is at the bar now, wiping down a few mugs and generally tidying up in preparation for the incoming wave of customers that Laius can already hear gathering outside. Next to the fire, Idzutsumi lays curled up on a soft carpet made of rag fur that the orcs had delivered to them. She never helps in the kitchen for long, since she still makes her cut vegetables sometimes, but not too often. They have to rewash everything she touches because of the shedding. Laius leans down close to the page and squints at the last letters he penned. The ink dries to a slightly purple shade of black, and waiting for that hue shift is the best way to ensure there's no more sticky page mishaps. So, just to be certain, Laius taps a finger against the page and brings it back to check. There's no pool and no residue left over. He excitedly flips the page to get started writing again. The second of these open areas is approximately in the middle of the trellis maze. There is a large opening in the floor, all the way through to the water below. The dirt here is thinner, less packed, and worn down in many places to see the stonework underneath it poking through. There are 12 paths in and out of this area, so it is important to keep your bearings when you pass through to avoid being trapped in the maze for longer. The dryads congregate in this area, but it is possible to safely pass through. Do not set up camp in this area, as tempting as it may be. You are only safe here if you are aware and awake. Camping, resting, and cooking are not recommended here. The third open area is just outside of the maze's exit. It starts as stone when you step off the floating platform, but as you continue on, it will transition into dirt. Towards the entrance to the fifth floor, the area will resemble a grassland. There are occasional trees, all embedded in the cave-like walls around this section. Dryads. The dryads of this region are half-foot-sized demi-humans. They are a particularly unique subspecies, not only due to their relatively small size, but the fact that they are not a gourd-based variation, but instead are grape-like. These dryads come in a variety of purple and red tones. Typically, their skin is covered in a thin, matte layer of a protective, waxy substance. This can be easily washed away, so you'll often see dryads without it on their hands or in splatter patterns along their body. Areas without the substance are shiny and better show off the rich pigmentation of their skin. Most dryads in this region keep their hair braided. If you are particularly lucky, you may catch them sitting in a circle, with each dryad tending to the next one's hair. They are particularly social, but do not let your guard down around them. If you sleep unguarded near their territory, or fail to keep an eye on your supplies, then they are known to poison your food. Keep an eye on the freshly turned dirt near the base of the trellises. You may find the bodies of other adventurers stuck in the ground to be used as fertilizer. You may initially be intimidated by the amount of eggs sitting heavy on the vines, but holding a grape between yourself and the light will tell you that most of what you're seeing are regular fruits. If you see seeds, then those are a dungeon-specific variation of grapes. They are mildly acidic and very sweet. These grapes are overall larger and longer than the eggs, but the natural variant means it's best to double-check. If you see a humanoid fetus forming inside, then that is a fertilized egg. These tend to be closer to spherical. It is best left on the vine to finish ripening into a dryad. If you spot one that looks to be empty, then that is an unfertilized egg. They tend to be smaller than both fertilized eggs and grapes. These are salty and slightly briny. They are most comparable to freshwater fish eggs in taste, but take slightly more force to pop due to having a grape-like skin rather than a membrane. Highly recommended. Keep in mind that fertilized and unfertilized eggs can form on the same vine. Seeing one fertilized egg does not mean that you need to avoid the whole bunch, and likewise, spotting one unfertilized egg does not mean that you should harvest the entire vine. It's not a long wait between setting his guide aside to dry again and Fallon coming out of the kitchen with a tray of food for both of them. "Start with this one, brother," she insists, passing him a bowl from the tray. "It turned out really good. Senshi based it off a recipe from a book I just brought back." Laios restrains himself. He doesn't put the bowl up to his lips and slurp the whole thing down, despite his stomach's urges. First, he takes it in, the sights and the smells of it. Thick, wavy noodles pool in the middle of a thin, slightly creamy broth. There are a few hardy cuts of man-eating plant stem, tucked in beside some dried dryad vine leaves. There's a whole boiled chicken egg, cut in half with a still runny yolk that's spilling into the broth. Finally, it's topped with a handful of the dryad eggs. He ladles up a spoonful of the broth and takes a slow, thoughtful sip. It's not fishy, but it's very sea-like. Laios can't come up with a better descriptor than that, though he's sure that one is out there. And that's just the first note. The soup also has a very rich, fatty pork flavour to it. He takes a bite of the man-eating plant. It's been marinated well enough that if it weren't for the texture, he could easily mistake it for an actual cut of meat. Still chewing, Laios turned to Fan and said, "That's so good!" "It's Eastern food?" "It is. Well, mostly, since she had to make a lot of substitutions." She tilts her head to the side and rests her face on one hand. "I tried to find the right kind of seaweed, but I don't know if it actually grows here. Everything we tried to dry out just tasted so bitter, but the dryad leaves are pretty close to what I ate when I was travelling, so we used those." Laios nods. He pops one of the leaves into his mouth. It's nice and salty on the end that was under the broth, but otherwise a little bland. He pushes the rest deeper into the soup with his spoon so they can soak. Senshi and Marcel come out with trays of their own and take seats at the table, staying away from the end where his guide is still drying. Chilcha comes to join. Itatsumi takes her time stretching out in front of the fire first, just like every actual cat Laios has ever been around. It's close to opening now, but they always make time to have a good meal together before letting the public in. It's both a good chance to talk, and a good way to get a feel for the day's dishes before explaining them to customers. Senshi chides Itatsumi for picking out so many vegetables, but is at least happy to see they aren't going to waste after she passes her tray to Laios and Fallon, and they finish them off. Marcel tries to coax more information out of Chilchak about his family after he lets it slip that one of his daughters is engaged now. Fallon keeps remembering bits of her latest trip that she forgot to tell everyone about, and then gets so excited as he talks that her feathers stand on end. It's nice to see everyone all together, and wonderful to have a delicious meal together again. It's unfortunately been a bit since they've all been here at the same time. Fallon, I only got back from the Eastern Archipelago a week or so ago. Lyo, Sanchi and Itsumi had been in a dungeon gathering ingredients and exploring the fourth floor with a few hired adventurers until yesterday morning. Honestly, Lyos had been under the impression that they wouldn't separate much after opening the restaurant, but that's not quite how it's worked out. He'd pictured them keeping the restaurant open until their supplies ran out, then closing up and delving together to restock. But Fan still has a bit of wanderlust. Chilchok's been visiting his daughters more, and Marcel keeps disappearing to do dungeon stabilization work for the canaries. Even when they're all here, they don't usually dungeon dive all at once. One or two of them stay back to keep the restaurant open with shorter hours. Once they've eaten and caught up, there's just enough time to clean their dishes before opening. After he's done his part, Lyos excuses himself to a storage room to keep working on his guide. He feels a little twinge of guilt that he's not helping more, but he can't be in the kitchen and he doesn't do well with the public. But then again, he knows he'll do the bulk of the cleaning tonight to make up for it. Lyo sits crisscross on the floor and hunches over a crate to write. His inkwell and notes are beside him on the floor. Culinary uses. The dryad and this dungeon are not recommended for consumption. Testing has proven that they are mildly poisonous in their adult form. Eating a small amount will not kill you, but you can expect to become ill from even a few bites. Unfertilized dryad eggs, however, are not poisonous. They are, as mentioned in the previous section, a good approximation of freshwater fish eggs. They work as an appropriate substitute in any dish where the size of the dryad eggs are no hindrance. The skins of the egg peel off quite easily. Make an egg-shaped incision opposite where the egg connected to the vine, then gently squeeze the other side. The yolk of the egg will pop out whole as long as you're careful not to cut through the inner membrane. The skins can be boiled, and the resulting water used as a stabilizer in savory or salty dishes. Boil them in just enough water to cover the skins, then strain. This will result in a concentrate usable for up to 3 weeks when appropriately stored in a corked bottle. If you continue to boil the stabilizer down until it becomes thick, then leave it to dry overnight. It can be cut into soft, jelly-like noodles that should be served cold to avoid melting. The yolks are small and easy to dry if left out by a fire. Dried yolks can then be ground into a powder that makes an excellent seasoning. It adds a slightly smoky, salty flavour. Lyos pauses. He thinks back to his breakfast. Dryad vine leaves and dungeon grape leaves taste and function quite similarly. The leaves from the dryad vines will be slightly salty and reminiscent of the kind of seaweed eaten on the Eastern Archipelago. This is especially true when it is dried. The dungeon grape leaves have a very slight tinge of sweetness to them, but that is only noticeable if eaten raw. Both varieties of leaves make good wraps, especially for any meaty or fatty dishes. They can be added to soups, but be sure to cut out at least an inch of stem from the base, as this part becomes very tough when boiled. The dungeon grapes themselves can be treated as any other berry. They can be made into jam, jelly, wines, pies, and more. Like the eggs, the skins can be boiled to make a stabilizer. This is better used with dessert dishes. Lyos stretches out his back when he finishes this page. That's all he can do on this section at the moment. Senshi has to double-check his measurements before he can confidently add the recipes in. For now, he cleans up his pen and leans against another crate to rest his eyes. You can hear the crowd bustling in the restaurant and his sister laughing in the kitchen. The smell of food in the air makes his stomach growl, but he's gotten used to sleeping on a half-empty stomach, so he soon falls asleep. End of fic. Thank you for listening.